woke up this morning with the sundown. Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. Matt Weber is vacationing. Where is he? He's on the Irish Riviera, isn't he? I think he is. Well, that would be Long Beach, Michigan.
I don't know where he is.
And he's up by you. He's by the Long Beach, Michigan. Isn't that the Irish Riviera?
Oh, I've not heard of it referred that way.
How could you not? Is it Southside Irish?
Oh, yes. It's the Irish Rev.
Brandon, I think that's why you call in, because you learn stuff. Now that once you became a lawyer, you entered like the, what do they call them, the dome or the, not the dome, what's the, the dome, you know.
You are just the epitome of information for me, Chief. I learn so much from you. That's why I call in every week.
Well, that's what I learned from the rest of you guys, so I just kind of spread it around. Just saying. So, your cabal of, let's put it this way, the Stocks and Jacks cabal of evil attorneys was all outraged with my memo yesterday that there could possibly be.
Well, it should be.
The attorney's fault.
You know, it has nothing to do with the lawyers in this case. It's all that spiritual advisors and the religious crap that happened. You know, when you hold yourself out as the epitome of Christianity, you've got to pay a price at some point.
How do you know he did? How do you know he just didn't hold himself out as the a fill in the gap, shall we say?
Well, this is a spiritual advisor who was trying to help the poor wife through a tough situation and winds up sleeping with her. Doesn't say a whole lot for morals and about doing the right thing.
See, the only issue I have with your cabal of attorney guys, and we sure have enough of them on the show, so if ever I want to get ganged up on, all I have to do is lob out there against the attorneys, is how many guys we got? Like four or five? And there's only just me? What we're talking about is, I don't know if anybody read the Tribune, but Ben Zobrist's wife, I don't know that much about the situation, nor do I really care, but my thing is, Brandon, somewhere along the line, the attorney had to write it down, and he should have said, I'm not writing that. That's my morality of the world. You can't be, half wet. You're either in the swimming pool or you're not. Well, the story is that Ben Zobrist, and he was the World Series MVP, right? 2016 and the Cubs.
Right, he won the World Series 2 years in a row with Kansas City and the Cubs in 15 and 16. In 16, he was the MVP of the Cubs in the World Series.
And he was
and then in 19, he left the Cubs in May because he and his wife were filing for divorce. And he went back to Tennessee to try to get the family settled and save the marriage. And then by the end of the season, he came back and played 20 games at the end of the season. And in that time that he left from May to September, I think it was, he lost the equivalent of $8 million in salary because he wasn't playing on the team and he had a leave of absence. And then the wife in the divorce proceedings now is saying that she is entitled to half of the $8 million that Zobrist lost in salary because he dissipated the assets by not playing, despite the fact that it was arguably due to her behavior with the pastor of the church that caused him to try to leave the team and not get the money. I mean, dissipation of assets usually means that somebody's squirreling away money or buying homes in Bermuda or someplace like that to the detriment of the family. It doesn't mean that you're leaving your job to try to save and keep the family unit together.
Well, we shall see what it means.
Yes, we will.
Who knows what Maybe they'll come. Oh boy, I'll get myself in trouble already on Tuesday. Maybe they'll come across a female judge.
Well, whether you have a female judge or a male judge, I'm not sure that this will make a whole lot of difference in this case because there was a time when women got the benefit of a lot of cases like this because it was seen that men were hiding assets in the divorce proceedings. However, she is a country singer and star in her own right.
Imagine that.
So it's not like she's just poor, innocent woman sitting back in the hills of Tennessee while her husband's gallivanting around the world making millions of dollars as a ball player. She had her own career, too, and she's pretty sophisticated in her own right.
Let me just say, I'm going to get myself in trouble here on a Tuesday morning. I certainly wasn't privy to, thank God, aware of an awful lot of the divorces of people who came off the trading floor that used to make, I might as well tell the whole story. Better tell the whole story here, Brendan, or it'll not be any good. David knows what I'm talking about. A lot of guys in the trading floor made a lot of money because they had a specific skill set. A lot of them maybe hadn't gone to college, not that that makes you rich or anything, and really, let's say, didn't have a transferable skill set. Is that a fair way to put it, David?
Yeah, that's actually a very fair way to put it.
So a lot of these guys, as soon as they stopped trading, some of the wives weren't exactly the kind that had their own career, if you know what I mean, Brendan. So when the money stopped, let's just say the marriage stopped. So and sometimes the guys had made, whatever, $200,000, $250,000 the year before, and kind of maybe even foolishly thought that their world would go on, and they maybe signed up for stuff like we'll pay for the kids' education and blah blah blah. All of a sudden, like not all of a sudden, but gradually we get to the point where there is no trading floor and there are no jobs. So it's not like these guys have law degrees or anything like that. So the next job might be, could be anything. Could be real estate, could be mortgage, could be, whatever, driving an Uber. And now the salary, instead of $250, is $50, at best. And let's just say that the combination of the lady judges and people maybe who never had a job in their life other than working for the government, the idea that one year you could make $250 and the next year make $50, in their mind, you just weren't trying hard. These guys were brutalized. Mm-hmm. You guys were brutalized by the system. Is this fair, David, or not? Or what do you mean? You can't pay for the education? Yeah, you can.
I've talked to many of guys that have went through that situation, Tom.
Yeah, and it's just, let's just say, if you're an entrepreneur trying to get yourself understood by a public employee is how 1 year wasn't as good as the next, they have no idea what you're talking about. Maybe some do, but most don't. And let's just say the lady judges were like, well, I don't care. You got to go out and work like four jobs. I don't care if I Uber 24 hours. I'm not making what I made as a market maker. Well, why not? That kind of thing. It's just, I was at a total distance just kind of hearing these stories. And I'm just like, man, we talk about a couple of guys were put in jail and they had to be bailed out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's
and that's one of the arguments for the so-called dissipation of assets is the husband. And I agree with you that in many of the cases that were decided earlier, it really was the traditional American family where the husband was the worker and the breadwinner and the wife was at home, and especially if she gave up a potential career. Say she was a college graduate and stayed home to raise the kids because the husband was a trader, had a good job, and then he lost it. It was a brutal situation, and the state law, the divorce laws, were really stacked in favor of the woman who was also granted custody of the kids. Men were also not granted even joint custody of the kids in many situations. But contrast that with the Zobrist, who, at least according to the stories, Ben Zobrist left his major league career. Now, admittedly, he was getting older. He was in his mid to late 30s, so he was probably on the short end of his career going forward at this point. He probably only had a couple more years at best, but he still gave up a lucrative career for the family to try to take care of the kids, and that apparently was a story that I seen when he was taking care of the kids and trying to reconcile with his wife at the same time, and then he gets blasted in this kind of a situation for dissipating the assets when he was responding to something that his former wife, or soon-to-be former wife, did.
Well, but when he retired, was he old enough to retire? Could he have played? I don't recall. It was 4 years ago, but he never came back after that year. Was that the time he would have retired anyway, or did he retire a year too early, you think?
Well, I think he might have had 1 year left on his contract when he retired after the 2019 season. But, of course, 2020 was the odd year, so you don't really know what happened. Because would he have made the Cubs or any team in 2020 with the cutdown? Would he have decided, for health reasons, the fear of getting COVID anyway, to go back to reduced seasons? And that's another example that even the ballplayers who played last year did not get the full salary awarded under the contract because they played 60 games instead of 162 games.
Well, you know, it is interesting when you ask people questions. One of the guys who, our attorney buddies, who was the most irate with my statement, I actually ran into him last night, and we were talking. I said, let me ask you this. And he just got married. So I said, you and the new wifey, you guys are doing great. She's terrific, by the way. And he's a great guy. So, I mean, I think it's one of the good ones. That marriage, I think, is good to go. But
you mean one of the good lawyers?
Well, he's a good lawyer, and his wife is terrific, and so is he. So, I mean, they're just really good people. And I said, so what if you sniff something going on, and you get a big case in California, and you go, I'm not going to California for 4 months. Looks like my marriage is in trouble. I'll just be here, and I'll make money here, but I'm not going to go there. All of a sudden, she sues you and said, because you didn't take the job in California where you might have made $500,000 in fees, you owe me $250,000. He goes, well, that would suck. I go, yeah, well, so if it's you, it's different. But if it's Zobrist, it's okay. Well, yeah, if you look at it that way. Anyway, what do you think?
But you know, you never know how things are going to turn out. I mean, in that scenario, a guy who goes to California for 4 months to make a lot of money, but you know, what happens if he stays here and the marriage deteriorates further, and he gets another case to take that's worth $1 million to him? You don't know.
Yeah. So what? Where do you? I know you're not, all in on the real estate part of this stuff. What do you think happens at the end of the month when everybody starts, being able to evict people, and all of a sudden some of these debts kind of come due where people don't have the money to pay the landlord, and then the landlord, we're not sure if they're paying the mortgage, and we're not sure if some of them are paying some taxes. And I mean, talk about with the courts sort of being closed, and people claiming that they're working from home. You know, I know I'm all over the block here, but Brandon, I just have a, I'm not being vindictive, but yeah, I am. I mean, I just sent in for my passport extension. I don't know how do I get to 10 years without going anywhere. I don't know, but all of a sudden the thing's out, so I sent it. All of a sudden, I'm hearing this report that they're 2.1 million passports behind schedule, State Department. Well, you know what, Brendan? I've heard so much from these people about how hard they're working. They're working their tail off so far that their fanny's raw at home, right? I got news for you. The State Department people at home getting paid didn't do crap. That's why they're 2.1 million passports behind. Or where am I wrong here, being a Southsider?
No, that's inexplicable, and I don't know what's going to happen. Well, let's take the mortgage or the home eviction rules first. We'll put the State Department and your passport aside for a while because you're not going anywhere in the next couple of days, are you?
No.
So okay, so we can kind of put that.
Well, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere, but I also don't have a passport, so I'm not going twice.
So you're not going.
Right, so I'm just not going.
You're definitely not going anywhere. Yeah. Even if you wanted to, you're not going anywhere.
Right.
But I think that there's a huge issue coming up in the next month or 2 months as the eviction protections go away at the end of the month. The interesting thing is that all the time that there were these rules put in place that you can't evict people for non-payment of rent, especially if they were put out of work because of COVID, a similar moratorium was not imposed on landlords. So go back to the story we were talking about last week that the earnings of the various banks and lending institutions coming up making more money than ever. And you really think that there's a really justifiable, equitable argument that they couldn't have gone through forbearance with the property owners of landlords who own a 3-flat on the south side of Chicago, own a mortgage to Chase Bank, that they couldn't have gone a couple of months or even a year without collecting on their mortgage? Because really the landlords are in a terrible jam because there was no moratorium for their payments to their lenders, but they also weren't getting money from their tenants, which is a double whammy for them. So, I mean, I think that it was a good thing to have the moratorium on renters up to a point, but without a similar conciliation for the landowners, for the mortgagors, it's going to be trouble for them.
I think you're right, Brennan. And I did you I think I sent it to you. I hope you didn't read it. Did you happen to see the report on how many people in the state of Illinois got PPP loans? Did I send that to you?
When did you send it? Are you talking about something recently? I read articles about that, but not recently.
Well, I actually sent you the list. There's a list.
Okay, I don't remember that.
All 656,000 people that received them in Illinois. Now, I happen to know a lot of people in the restaurant industry, and they got, you know, smacked back and forth pretty hard last year. The people who, you know, you're closed, but only for 2 weeks. Okay, but then you're back open, and people go out and buy stuff again and hire people back and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of those people went out. I mean, fortunately, the people that I were at, every place I go, they manage to survive. There's no correlation there, by the way. They just happen to. But there's other places. I mean, Audrey's or my friends that work for some of the liquor companies will tell you that they've lost, you know, 20,000 clients or something, you know. So there's a lot of places that didn't come back, but I didn't really know the owners there all that personally, but I know some of them, from what I hear, you know, use their own savings, use their own stuff, and then, you know, because the government, and, you know, they thought that COVID would be over in a month, whatever. Let's say it's a mistake that was made fairly. They basically got jacked around. You know, you're reopening. Oh, no, you're not reopening.
They did.
Yeah, I mean, because you got... So at the end of the day, if you'd have closed on day one, you might have lost the business. But when they did close, they lost, by the way, all their savings trying to keep it open and the business. So it was like the double whammy.
Oh, yeah, it was brutal.
But if you... The places that survived... And, you know, I don't know, somewhere along the line here, if I hear one more person whining that they got to pay somebody $15 an hour versus 10, and I look at this thing and find out that their business got like $500,000 twice in the PPP loan, and they never closed, you know what, Brandon, I'm about ready to get a water balloon shooter and aim it at them. I mean, really?
I agree with you.
Really? I mean, come on, really? Who's kidding who? I mean, did they go through the list? You'll see places like the Prime Cut? Got, you know, I have seven figures. Mm-hmm. Ditka's got, he got two locations left? He got like $500,000 twice in both locations. You know, these, you go down, you just go through the list and you see these familiar names. Plus a lot of them, the corporations, I'm sure I wouldn't even recognize who the actual corporate name is. But the thing, you can say restaurants, and sure enough, they start popping out in the $2, $3, and $4 million number. I mean, some of these places, you know, I mean, now you're telling me that you can't pay somebody, you know, $13 an hour instead of 12? I mean, not to mention the fact everybody's raised their prices 20%. No, I understand that that they've been beaten up for years on electric bills, gas bills, leases, I mean, you name it. But really, why does our society, I mean, Brennan, you're my counselor in on Tuesday for sure. Why are people so, let's say, collectively uneducated on accounting and cost systems to where everybody believes that the poor restaurant now is being screwed by the guy making $10 an hour and wanting 15. And yet every other cost, we don't care about the people's gas thing tripling or whatever it was in the last 20 years. We don't care about ComEdison. After all, they're very philanthropic, right? We don't care about the taxes. Mm-hmm. I mean, this place across the street here, they weren't a restaurant. Remember the CVS that was there at 175 Jackson?
Yeah.
Well, those guys, they had this is a big company. I mean, it's CVS, obviously. So I'm sure, I won't say they got, you know, line cooks making $10 an hour, but what do you suppose, I'm not talking about the pharmacists, what do you think the rest of the people making there? Not very much.
Not very much at all.
I mean, I honestly don't have a clue, but it's got to be close to 15 tops. You know, the cashier to CVS.
Well, you're getting to a really interesting point right now, and that's the disparity among wage workers versus the executives. And, you know, you go back like the Japanese model for one thing, but also the way that it was in this country, say back in even the 50s and the 60s, when the executive, the C-suite folks were making, you know, maybe 2 to 3 times what the line workers were making, whereas now they're making 50 to 100 times what the line
keep going on that.
You really can't. There's a really hard time to cry poor when you're looking at the disparity between a guy in the C-suite and a guy who's on the assembly line at a manufacturing plant.
Well, when I was at Pullman, it was 10 times. Because the guys on the line made like maybe 20, 22, and the chairman made 250. The chairman was actually McDivitt, the astronaut, ex-astronaut, by the way.
Mm.
But I'm saying at the CVS, the creepy crawler thing that put those guys out of business over there, now CVS is not out of business, but their rent, Brennan, was $17,000 a month, which they were pretty happy to pay. I'm going to say that location, I'm going to guess, was one of their best. You know, maybe not countrywide, but it was, I mean, they were pretty much crowded all the time. And I don't know how many prescriptions they had there. I mean, how easy was it in a building that probably housed how many thousand people? You always get your prescriptions downstairs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, well, that building, 175 West Jackson, I mean, you probably know this. I think to this day still is the third biggest building in the city. It's a merchandise mart. It's a Willis Tower and then them. It's a full square block. And mm-hmm. But anyway, so they had one of those, what do they call the ones where your lease includes all the piggy move up on the taxes you got to pay?
The net.
Triple net or double net or something like that?
Yeah.
They got after, and I'm gonna take a stab and say they were there 15 years, maybe 12 or something, but I think they came in right after the place was redone in 2000, so they probably were there 2004 and they were out of there 3 years ago, so where's that? That's 12, 15 years. Their net, I won't say bonus, but the extra amount was up to $250 on taxes and stuff. Well, hell, Brendan, you can pay an awful lot of people an extra couple bucks an hour for $250, you know, for another $12,000 a month. It's a lot of money.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, and nobody says, well, how big is the city is demanding you pay people wages? They're never going to back off on their taxes, so you can. But why do you suppose at this day and age when a bunch of people, if just ask younger people and they'll tell you, meaning you and me, have never had access to news like you have now. Everybody knows everything about everything. And yet I've never seen in my lifetime something that gets to be a little lie, a fat lie, a huge lie, the big lie, whatever you want to call it. Everybody will tell you now that the reason why the restaurants and all these people are being screwed is because the guy who's supposed to be willing to work for 10 bucks an hour wants 15. That is absolutely endemic in our society right now. And you know what, Brendan? It's just not true. Is it?
I agree with you. It is not true. There are so many other circumstances. And I also believe that a lot of people, the reason a lot of people are not going back to work is not because of the government subsidy of the unemployment benefits. That is a component. And in some cases, that may be a big component, but I think there are a lot of other factors. It's not a simple black, white, right, wrong, left, right answer as to one thing is contributing to that. There's a confluence of matters, and while that may be one, there's a lot of other ones, including the fact that people don't trust that industry is going to be around anymore. When you look at the number of restaurant jobs and hotel jobs that have gone by the wayside, you know, people are looking for something else that may be more stable.
Well, the two or three ladies that were my friends over at Ceres, waitresses, when you're somebody's your waitress for years and years, or Jay-Z worked over there and she worked for the show. Jessica's working for an executive search firm now. She's got her DePaul degree. She's moving on up and out. She's not going back to Ceres. Well, actually, you make a lot of money at Ceres back in the day, but I mean, she's not going back there, right? Why would she?
Mm-hmm. Right. There are a lot of people who like the hospitality industry, whether it's hotels or bars or restaurants, and some of them make good money, especially for the lifestyle they want to live. But other folks see it as a transitory position that, like, flipping hamburgers at McDonald's. You know, people talk about their first job at 16, but they move on to a career later on in life. And I think with the blows that were hit to the hospitality industry, a lot of people have decided, okay, I've done my tour as a waitress. I'm slinging hash at the delivering food to the table of Lou Mitchell's or wherever, and now I want to have a different career.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. Both Jessica and AZ, Angelica. I mean, they've moved on up and got better. They were to help us out here on Stacks and Jacks. You know what, Brendan? I miss them because they absolutely mm-hmm. they had the best personalities. Both of them, boy, the whole place was had a better day when they were here in the morning. Talk about pleasant, nice. I mean, just as I mean, and I wish them all the success on earth because they deserve it. But I tell you what, I miss them because they were a light in the light in the room for 2 hours every morning. I mean, you remember them,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and. So I mean, I hope that maybe they learned some stuff from the people who we talked to on the show and so forth, and I think they would say it was a positive experience. And I'll bet you know maybe we help them out later in life by knowing some people and learning some different points of view. But I tell you what, they're mm-hmm. new employers. They're lucky people, I believe. I mean,
yeah.
Anyway, Brendan, thanks very much. But SPG,
I think you had a really great point there, though. That you know why should people get down on the workers who are making $10 instead of 15, and that's not the one sole reason that so many businesses are having trouble finding employees or that they make a lot of business. It's not just because of the overhead that they're going to have to pay some of their workers a few more bucks an hour.
Well, I guess I'll make a stab at why, Brendan. Just like being on the trading floor, where you if somebody's on your level and they're not pulling their weight, you're pissed off at them. You really can't fight City Hall. So everybody knows a cousin or heard of a cousin who's got his ass on the sofa drinking beers every day, getting his unemployment check, and you can put your vitriol toward that person. It's not the same to put it against the city for a tax bill too high, or you really can't fight people's gas, right? You just mm-hmm. so you just put it out of your mind, and somehow or another, all you vent towards. The person on your level or something, or the person that you think is cheating somebody else. The guy who's getting his unemployment that's lazy and isn't looking. I mean, how many people fire off against those people? And they could care less if, United Airlines executive's getting paid at home and he's not doing crap because of the COVID. I mean, how do you fight that mm-hmm. one? Right? You just can't do it.
It's hard to fight it.
Anyway, thanks very much, buddy. Talk at you next week. Kevin, are you here or are you in Michigan?
I'm over in Michigan right now looking out at the garden and the trees.
Oh, good for you. Why don't you go out there and weed that garden, do a little work here, for God's sake.
This is the time of year where we get to enjoy the garden because Val has done a lot of the weeding work so far and most of the weeds are gone. So we're just smelling the flowers right now.
So you're one of those guys, oh, you're weeding the garden, I think I'll spend today in the city?
Well, I've gone back to the city a few times. In fact, I am going back later on today because I've got an appointment there tomorrow.
Anyway, take care. So if you're around, stop by. We'll always love to see you. SP Fever's up 23. Nancy Fever's up 68. Be right back.
What confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen with Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures are up 23 now, and NASDAQ futures down 66. We were down, we were pushing 100 on the futures yesterday a few times. I don't think we ever quite made it down 100, but we were getting there, and, Dow was down at one point over 900, and I was thinking, are we going to make it to 1,000? We did not, fortunately. So right now, we got the Dow futures are up 190. So over in Europe, we've got DAX up 11 cents, so not exactly a bounce back yesterday from yesterday. FTSE up 16.2%, CAC around up 25.4%. So not, like I say, not much of a bounce there at all. Over in Asia, the Nikkei down 264. That's another 1%. They were down yesterday, but obviously not as much as we were here. Shanghai down 2. They were unchanged yesterday as well, so they're hanging in there. Hang Seng, however, was down yesterday a full percent. Now they're down another 0.8, 230. So they're getting whacked 2 days in a row. Just as a way of review, yesterday, Dow was down 725 after being down over 900. It came back some, but not that much. S&P down 68. Like I said, it was probably down, I think it might have been down, the futures might have been down 90. But so we came back there as well on some. The NASDAQ up, well, yesterday the NASDAQ was down 152 and we're back 63. The NASDAQ was not down as much as the rest of them, like most of the day. Bonds, 1.19, so that's as low as it's got, even though it's up, well, it's barely up today. Bund minus 0.02, which put change, so that puts us minus 0.41. Now, how the hell those guys have a negative 10-year rate with inflation over there? Their real rate of interest has got to be like minus 5. It's crazy. Japan, we're getting as close to zero as we can get. 0.009. How's that, David? Wow. Oil, up 21 cents, 66.63. So oil's down, pushing $9 in the last 2 weeks. It topped out about 75. So it's down, whatever that is, how many percent? 1.5? No, not 1.5, almost 10%. Actually make that 15%. Which is a lot. Brent down up 27 cents, 68.91. Those guys were again over 75. Natural gas down a penny, 3.76. RBOB unchanged at 2.11. We got gold bouncing back a little bit, up 6.90, 18.16. Silver unchanged at 25.15. Copper up a penny, 4.21. And here's kind of the big news in the morning: Bitcoin down 9.80 to 29,707. So now the $90 billion is wiped off the crypto market, with this thing down here. So, the crypto is not helping people. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. 6:38 in Chicago. Weather today, currently it's 71, partly sunny. We're going to have highs around 85 today and sunny. For our Phoenix listeners, morning started out 90, partly cloudy. You're going to reach 105 today, and there'll be some sunshine. Traffic this morning, you got your normal buildups on the Kennedy and the Eisenhower due to construction. Slow down on 55 North at the Ryan Expressway. Exit as usual. There was an earlier accident on Tri-State North right before US 12, which is the 95th Street exit. The two left lanes are blocked. There's solid traffic. Expect delays up to an hour. In sports, NBA Finals tonight, Game 6. The Suns play at Milwaukee. Milwaukee does lead the series and can close them out 3-2. Major League Baseball, Sox had a doubleheader yesterday. They dropped the first game 3-2. The second game, they won 5-3 against the Twins. Cubs lose to the Cardinals 8-3. Diamondbacks beat the Pirates 4-2. Back to you, Chief.
Diamondbacks, that's got to be their first two in a row all year.
Oh, they're playing the Pirates.
That's true. It's, I mean, when you get down that low, it's do we have Joel?
You should have
Joel. Yes, sir.
Joel, how are you, buddy? How was your week off?
It was excellent. Northern Michigan, I preach it every year. You absolutely have to go to the Harbor Springs, Petoskey area. Golfing with my nephew. Paddle boarding, which I'm not the greatest at. Swimming in Little Traverse Bay. Hikes. You name it. I did it, Chief.
Well, good for you. Petoskey, that area is big. That's big one percenter territory, isn't it?
You're talking about for COVID?
No, I'm talking about, isn't all the rich people in Detroit go up there? I mean, all the auto people? Isn't that all auto money from like years ago?
I mean, a lot of people have used Northern Michigan as a hideout. You could go back to the Depression days when the Purple Gang used to hide up in that area, but there's a lot of Detroit area money, but there's also a lot of Chicago money that comes up there. But Chief, I don't want to be a jinx.
Okay.
So I want to bring this up just because to show people how old we are.
Yep.
Where were you on January 28th, 1986?
Imagine I was standing in the OEX pit where I always was.
Okay. And I was clerking in the S&P pit.
Okay.
And you remember what happened that day?
January. Why does that ring a bell? I don't, but why does that ring a bell?
The Challenger.
Oh, okay. You know what? Believe it or not, I was going to say that. And we ended up up on the day.
Yep.
We went down when it happened. We had just gotten get a little. Well, you were there. You know, David. Remember, this is how the world was in those days. You couldn't have a computer. You couldn't have a computer on the floor. You couldn't even listen to CNBC. There were no TVs because they thought it would give the people on the floor an unfair advantage by watching TV. That's how. They wanted to make sure that market makers didn't have an advantage on other people. And we didn't have the TVs that long, and one of the first things we saw was the Challenger blowing up. Remember?
Yep, and I remember.
It was,
I mean, things have come a long way since then, and, you know, it's just so funny because they went up, Virgin Galactic went up, and, everything was fine, and, I was just sitting here doing my research for the show, and, I brought this up, and went to say goodbye to my wife, and I looked at it, and I go, what's wrong, honey? She goes, I'm worried about this space launch, and that was exactly what was on my mind. But look how long ago was that, right?
Yeah. You know?
So the technology's improved. It's really an incredible moment. I don't think that even if someone paid for me to go to space, that I would do it. But the advances in technology are just incredible. And,
well, he's not really.
We won't be watching that today.
He's not really in a spacecraft like the Challenger, right? He's in essentially a high end plane that gets up high enough to be considered weightless.
Yes.
I mean, he's not the Challenger had. Well, I don't want to spend too much time because you're not here long enough. But the Challenger, the Challenger was like a horse designed by committee. The Challenger was supposed to be what they have today, is a big, huge plane that flew the shuttle up high enough to where the shuttle could make it the rest of the way on its own. That's what it was supposed to be. Then they cut back on the budget and they ended up with the two solid fuel rockets on the side of the shuttle. And the problem with those things is the minute you lit the fuse, you could not turn them off. Hence the name solid fuel. That's all they were. Those things on the side of the shuttle, They were 99% fuel. And once you turn it on, you went someplace. But it was not supposed to be like that. Because I had a class in Notre Dame by the guy who was one of the original designers when it was thought about in the 60s. It was supposed to be a big, huge air vehicle like these guys sort of have today with the shuttle hanging off the top. And that thing was supposed to get them up to 60, 70,000 feet. Then they would let the shuttle go and it would take off the rest of the way itself and make it to the orbit that it needed to be for the space station and all that stuff. The shuttle was never designed to leave the Earth's atmosphere. It was not for those. Well, how about this, David? I shouldn't do this on the show. For you to get into orbit like the space station, I think you need to be what, David? 17,600 miles an hour. You got to be able to go to actually leave the Earth's orbit and just keep going, like past Mars and those places. You got to be like 25,000 miles an hour. That's why the Saturn V rocket was so much bigger than the ones that got stuff in orbit. You had to actually break the Earth's orbit. Well, I don't think this plane or the shuttle or any of that stuff were ever designed to actually leave the orbit. Were they, Joel? They could never go that fast.
I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it. It's just a historic day. Just talking about the markets here. Friday closed on the low for the week. And then you just got that immediately follow through on Monday. I like when the market does this because, now I have some reference points where we're going up every day. It's hard. You don't want to short the market. There's no resistance. And now there is. You had a 160-point break off the high. So, spitballing it. If this market regains 4,300, I'm talking the S&P 500 index over the next few days, then all is well in bull land. If we can't, recapture that level, even Friday's close, then we got some more work to do on the downside. So, no one likes to see their portfolio get hit. No one likes to see the market go down. But if you can follow the markets, on a shorter term basis, at least it gives you some reference points.
Real quick question, Joel, before we let you go, is the slippage, I won't say the demise, the slippage in Bitcoin here, it's now meaning real money to some people. If that keeps going, is that going to cause a problem?
Is it going to cause a problem?
In the market?
So far, no. And in fact, a lot of times you've seen, the opposite effect. Bitcoin seems to be its own animal, and I've been saying this for a while. There's just too much competition out there. What is there? 5, 6, 8,000 different coins out there? And, maybe Bitcoin's gonna, evolve long term and be a store of value and a transactional currency and maybe Ethereum too. But I just think there's a lot of competition out there. I think that there's probably some very sophisticated arbitrage going on between all these different currencies. And I think once the arbs get things down, I think it really mutes the volatility, and that's what you're seeing here in Bitcoin.
How do you arb 5 things that are all worthless?
How do you and I arb them?
Yeah, we don't, huh?
We short them all.
That's right.
We short them all.
All right, Joel, take care. Take care of yourself, buddy. We'll talk at you next week. Dave, we're going right to Kenny?
We're going to take a little break right here, and then I'll get Kenny.
All right, SP Futures up 22, NASDAQ Futures up 59.
People who suffer with pain, do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Elway. He's Mr. Dave Scantino. SP Futures up 21. NASDAQ Futures up 53. David, I do remember that day in the pit. It was around when the Challenger went down. I'm going to say it was mid-morning. The pit was not very crowded. And everybody, you could see the look on everybody's face kind of not a good look. Because what's-her-name was on it? Was he the grammar school teacher? Christy, what the hell is her name? It was the first time somebody had was going up from, that wasn't an astronaut or something?
Not sure. Technical difficulties on the phone. I'm trying to get, our buddy Kenny on.
All right, well, we'll keep working on that, and we'll talk a little bit about the market. I'm going to make somewhat of a market statement here, and it's reminding me a little bit, again, don't take any of these as specific stocks or anything like that, even though I'm going to name a couple. It reminds me an awful lot of 1999-2000 in some ways. No, I'm not saying that the result is going to be the same, because everything's a lot different. But you had a situation where I probably mentioned this before, I was in the OEX pit, which was the S&P 100. So other than a couple of, for those that don't know, just as historical reference, it wasn't exactly that the top 100 S&P stocks. It was the top 100 stocks on the CBOE. Because when the S&P 500 came out, that was an S&P, essentially. The name S&P was already on it. So S&P sold off on it. They got paid for it, all those kinds of things. So that the exchanges had to pay S&P for that future to use the name. Same way you would have to use Dow to use that name. Okay, well, the CBOE essentially was slow and missed out on the S&P 500 future, and the options on the futures were over at the market. I think they might have options. Those. Anyway, so the CBOE is like, what are we going to do? So they picked the top 100 stocks on the CBOE and said, okay, we're going to have options on something called the OEX. Options exchange, basically index. Well, you couldn't use any stuff that was in it that wasn't listed at the CBOE. So, I think Chevron wasn't in there, Digital wasn't in there. A couple of stocks that weren't, traded on the CBOE. So, it wasn't, exactly the top 100, but it was pretty close. So, that was essentially my world. Those stocks, and there was no PTI yet. There was in 1999. We'd started in 91. But so we had clients and so forth that had, you know, other stocks. And matter of fact, we had a lot of them. But it had these other stocks. But little for me personally, I mean, we just watched them almost in amusement from the pit. And, it was a tale of two worlds. So all those stocks were like racing up on you know, because you bought the internet address or something like 1-800 Flowers flew to the moon and all these other things went to the moon. So there were these companies that were just, they really called them the dot bombs. And they were racing up, and the people in the OEX are just sitting there watching, basically, as we traded, you know, the most liquid contract in the world at the time, which was the OEX. So there was a tale of two worlds. The regular stocks in 1999, 2000 got somewhat pricey, but they weren't, you know, double, triple what they were supposed to be. And they were at a level at which, you know, you could have grown into them. But the other ones were just like really, really high. I mean, the Ciscos of the world, the Oracles. I mean, Cisco was trading 65 when it was, its revenue was $5 a share. So it was 13 times revenue, which is really friggin' high. Well, now we're sort of in the same situation, and one I would recommend that you take a look at, not because it's too high, too low, anything like that. Just I would take a look at this transaction where Zoom is buying this firm at 5.9 something anyway, but they're paying a nominal $14.9 billion or 14.7 for this place. Now, if you dig into Zoom's numbers, you'd say, okay. So the first time I heard that, as I said, that's interesting. Zoom doesn't have $14.9 billion, and oh, by the way, couldn't borrow it if their life depended on it. So where exactly they're getting it? And I'm thinking this other firm must be going to take Zoom stock at essentially today's price, which is, I'll get the exact number here, but it's 370 something. It's I'm sorry, 356.90. It was down some yesterday, I guess, on this deal. So say 357. So they're going to take this stock basically as legal tender for this other firm. And so I dug into some of the Zoom stuff yesterday, and the whole company after last year, the book value is $3 billion, 3.6. So their stock, just the piece they're going to give these guys, is 14.9. So you sit there and you say to yourself, okay, what is going on? Well, a lot of this stuff was taking place before 2000 as well, where you were going to use, and to be perfectly blunt, if all of a sudden the people at Robinhood, if PTI was public, and for some reason they ran our stock up to 300 or something, and the listed market cap of PTI was like, you know, $50 billion, and I'm sitting there going, I don't think it's quite that high. if I was one of those kinds of guys, the first thing I'm going to do is run around and buy other firms using my very inflated stock as legal tender. And if somebody's basically used the term foolish enough to take it, I guess I'll take their firm from them. You know, that would not be my first choice. I'm not that kind of a guy. People know that. But I tell you what, I mean, it's not much different than the guys from AMC, the movie company, when their stock got up to whatever it got up to, saying, well, if it's straight up here, we're going to sell some of our treasury shares out at this price. We think it's worth five, and oh, by the way, we're going to get 35. Why don't we do that? You know, so they did. So one thing leads to another, leads to another. And all this stuff is certainly happened before in my lifetime. You know, so it's not like this stuff can't happen again. I mean, it does. It's kind of bizarre that you, you know, you can either read about stuff happening, you know, like 500 years ago, and it sounds like it's today. You know, when I read this stuff about the tulips, and I found out they found a way to get the tulips on the stock exchange of Amsterdam at the time. This is the 16, 1700s. They managed to get it on the stock exchange, and oh, by the way, found a way to margin, to give margin loans on it. Well, as soon as that happened, now this other firm, now you have to ask yourself, are they going to have an ability to sell a stock day one, or are the guys from Zoom going to be smart enough to say, well, the executives can't sell it for X number of years or months or something? Because the last thing you want, if you're Zoom, is for all these shareholders of this other place and executives to get and try and sell it the first day. And then, you know, so all of a sudden the thing is, you know, drops $100 or something because everybody wants to sell it. Anyway, S&P futures up 24, NASDAQ futures up 68. We come back. We hope we have Mr. Jeff Joseph. We will see. So we have some technical problems, but hopefully David is fixing them. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Alley, Mr. Dave Scantina, working on the board and on the phone system. S&P Futures up 23, NASDAQ Futures up 6150. We have Dow Futures, I'll get those in a second. Dow Futures are up. They were up 200 points before. Now they're back up 210. So we're rebouncing here. So it looks like we have a little bit of a morning. Now again, yesterday we were down. The Dow were down 700. So a Fibonacci return would be 2/3. So we're not even close to that. We got to be over 500, and I don't see that in the cards at least just yet. But we'll see what happens. I mean, we have. A lot of issues bouncing around. We have the COVID, which everybody was putting cause yesterday was on COVID. I don't know that that was necessarily the cause. We have the Fed had to put an awful lot of money in the system last week. We've had a lot of cross currents going on here, and I don't know whether it's very difficult to say at this point what is driving the market any given day. I mean, sometimes you can certainly put an opinion on it, but the that opinion is not necessarily the best all the time. So, David, when you were listening yesterday, I assume you were going to that they were saying it was all COVID, right?
Oh, it was COVID related. Yes, the new strain, especially in Europe. It's funny because I have a friend in Poland right now, and he's there for 6 weeks. Unfortunately, he didn't get vaccinated, and when he got there. He cannot leave the country now.
He can't come back here. Or he can't go.
Well, he can't travel around like he wanted to. He's been there. He has family and friends there, so he's just visiting all of Poland. But he had planned on visiting other countries. But because he does not have the vaccine, he cannot visit other countries. He's a Polish passport and a American passport. So. That's how he got. I go, good luck getting home. You might as well get your shot there.
Well, there's a lady, how's her name? Roman? So, her from the trading floor. I don't know her last name. I think she worked for, one of the DPMs. She might have worked for Letco. Roma or Rona or something. And, she was gonna take one of these trips. Very nice lady. But she's got, more of a move in, or let's put this way, a zest for adventure than me, but she was going to go someplace during the COVID. We who do we have?
We got Jeff on the line.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, man, how are you?
All right, we're fighting with AT&T again this morning. I was just mentioning, this lady who used to be on the trading floor, and she was kind of got to her spot in life where she wanted to take this really nice world tour, right? This is 6-8 months ago. And she was going to go to like four or five countries where every place she went, she had to stay in a hotel by herself for like 2 weeks before she could go out into society because of the COVID. I'm going, it's a straight, you're taking like a 15-week vacation where like six of the weeks you're going to be in a hotel by yourself. And she's like, yeah. And I'm going, good luck with that. I don't know if I could do that, Jeff. But so because David was talking about a friend of his was in Poland, and now he can't go from country to country. So his vacation's kind of washed.
I hear you.
Well, how are you, man?
We are good. We are getting our next issue of Luckbox to print today. It's a magazine that will show up in about a week on newsstands, and it's our gambling focused issue, or it's an issue focused on the decision making processes that go into gambling, things like the Kelly criteria. Is that something you've ever run across?
I probably heard something like it, but no. Mm-hmm. I've done some game theory stuff, but it was years ago. It was different guys' names were on the stuff then.
That's what we're doing. It's a kind of a deep dive into the cognitive sciences behind bet sizing and decision making related to any process where you have incomplete information. So the markets,
who's the gambling, guy? Who's
politics, love, life.
Well, it's all sort of the same. Who's the guy who said that in any sort of game or in any kind of game theory, the last whatever it is, spin of the dice, whatever you lose, you should have the biggest bet out there that you've made the whole day is the one you finally lose or something like that.
When you finally lose?
Well, because you have been making money the whole way and you keep upping your bet.
Yep.
You know, I've been thinking about our
idea
discussion
behind the Martindale approach.
Maybe that was it.
Been long, long debunked. The idea, you know, kind of double up to catch up, you know. As a former trader, you would know those are the guys that blew out first, right? The guys who doubled up to catch up, and it just doesn't work that way.
Well, actually, in some gambling, the double up would always work, except for one thing, and you know the answer to this. David, do you?
Except for your last bet.
So your bankroll.
No, let's just say you had an unlimited bankroll. You guys should know this.
Then it always works.
No. What's the first thing you see when you sit down at any table?
A waitress?
Well, there would be one guy who looks at the waitress.
Is that how you choose what table to sit down in?
Let's just say I've done that. Just saying. Way back in the day, we first started going to Vegas, we always went to the Circus Circus. The ladies there were spectacular, Jeff. Spectacular. Not that I noticed. We had our blackjack table, not because we won there all the time, but we had our girl. Just saying. The first thing
I'm now looking at the ladies right now, and I'm still baffled by your quiz. What is the first thing you see?
You see a table limit.
No. All right.
Because the thing that screws up the double up theory is the table limit.
So that's what we're talking about, is bet sizing, and that's where the Kelly criteria comes in.
But that's a house rule. I mean, it's not.
Sure.
Yeah. If they didn't
but if you have an unlimited bankroll, the size of the bet doesn't matter. Martindale will always get you back even, because if you can bet infinite amounts of times on a 50-50 proposition, ultimately, if you're doubling up each time, you'll come back to zero. The problem is nobody has an infinite bankroll.
Well, or can't use it because of the limit.
Right. Exactly.
For those that don't understand,
I see your point. I see where you're going. Yes, absolutely.
For those that don't know what we're talking about here, if you want to, let's assume for a second that craps or blackjack, if you kind of know what you're doing, are roughly 50-50. Craps is like almost exactly 50-50. The other part of the game theory, which I'm sure Jeff would mention if I give him a chance to talk, is the better your odds, usually the faster the handle on the table. So, like, craps is a very fast game. So, in general, you're going to get a much better odds towards you in any game that's fast, because the casino basically wants to win, you know, money per hour. So, the slower the game, the worse your odds. Right, Jeff?
That's fair.
And so, if you go play craps, now, if you play the pass line, and I won't go into the come line or the don't pass line. If you play the pass line, your odds are what, 0.495 or something like that, Jeff? It's real close.
Very close, right.
So let's call it 50-50. So if you put $1 down there and you lose, okay, you're down a buck. Well, now if you bet two and you win that one, you win the three you bet, you're up a buck, right?
Right.
So, and if you lose that one, you're going to bet eight. Or you put two, then
three,
four, then
three,
eight.
You're going to bet six.
Yeah. So you keep doubling up to the point where if it's 50-50, somewhere along the line, you're going to win one of the bets. In which case, you've now won your original $1 you bet. So it's called the double up theory. And there's really no way that the house can win against that. Okay. Except for two reasons. You run out of money. That the next bet has to be $64 and you lose that one, and then you don't have $128, so you screw yourself. Okay. The other thing is, if the house puts a $100 limit on the table to when, if you do lose five or six in a row or seven or eight, and the next bet has to be $128, you can't bet the $128 because the minimum's $100. So that's the two ways you can get basically slammed on the theory, right? Right, Jeff? And one is of your making and one is of their making. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah. So that is the martingale theory. It's something that originated back in France a couple hundred years ago, and it's how everybody played for quite a while. And eventually, the casinos did exactly what you said. They'd recognize that some people had larger bankrolls than others, but that wasn't enough insurance for the casinos. So that the martingale theory actually predates the table limits that you often find. It was that theory that the casinos had to respond to because it was being widely adopted by gamblers.
Well, way, way back in the day, the Puerto Rican casinos, this was all, did you ever read you probably didn't go back and read the original Scarnia and Cards, this is before Thorpe's book. The actual rules of blackjack in Puerto Rico were that they had to deal down to the last card. And they could only use one deck. So yep. Even I could count those.
Sure, absolutely.
And so there were guys that like knew the last card was an ace. so they're like, yep. they're doubling down on seven or something. You know, guys are like, hey, wait, what are you doing? Well, they knew the next card was an ace, giving you an 18 and the dealer had a seven up type of thing. You know, so those rules changed because obviously in Vegas, you can see for years and years, they can shuffle whenever they want. And you mentioned
Thorpe's book, and we've interviewed Thorpe in the past. He's getting up there a little bit and doesn't do as much as he used to. Of course, he was on Wall Street for about 30 years, and he wrote the book, The Poker Face of Wall Street. And I forget the first book that he wrote before.
He wrote a book on option pricing.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was prior to becoming. And then he ended up being the head of quant, the quant fund or the hedge fund at Bob Arnott Securities. But he had a long, distinguished Wall Street career as a quant, but also as a professional poker player. And it kind of started a trend. A lot of hedge funds and prop trading houses were actively searching and hiring people that had kind of proven poker playing acumen. And, we end up, our main interview in this next issue of What Rocks is with Andy Duke, who, as you may know, won the 2004 World Series of Poker. You know, she got a lot of visibility on that as a woman, but they were focusing on the wrong thing. This is a woman who had studied cognitive sciences long beforehand. She was a professor. She took a poker as an academic exercise. She excelled in it. And now she's back to teaching at Wharton, teaching the exact same thing, risk, decision-making, bet sizing. She's written a couple of books on it, and she's our primary interview. So she's quit poker, and she explained why. She wanted to go back and focus on the academics of risk management and risk-taking and bet sizing. And that's what she does, a couple of TED Talks, classes at Wharton. She's prolific now, writing books, and that was our lead interview. So that's, if you go to getluckbox.com, the digital issues are free. That magazine will publish in about a week. Send it in it goes to the printer today and it's in newsstands next week, and it's free in digital form at Kettle Athletics.
Jeff, what which all this stuff that the people you interviewed, and I'm sure you interviewed a lot of people who didn't get in there, just to see who was the best or the most unique. What has anybody ever brought up, maybe other than me, one of the biggest differences I find between the market and the randomness of the market and the gambling? Because I used to do that a real lot. I mean, hell, I probably knew how to play poker pretty well when I was five. That's all my family ever did. Not Texas Hold'em or anything like that. All the other stuff, studs and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The biggest difference is the market's fixed, in my mind. You don't have a Fed coming in and reshuffling the deck where all of a sudden there's five aces and they have two, you know, type of thing. To me, there's a massive difference. Some of the biggest moves in the market are because of moves in government, and they're pre-planned, and they're to benefit some people versus others. Now, as an investor, you know, somebody who, you know, gives money to PTI or whatever I manage for you, it doesn't affect anybody who's in the market for I suppose you could have given somebody money the day before the crash in 29 and took a while to get it back, like, you know, a century. But by and large, it doesn't really affect you all that much as an investor.
Right. But as a trader, it does.
As a trader, it does. And actually, I mean, right now, I would say it could very well affect you as an investor if you have a short time horizon and you pile into all these stocks that I think are grossly overvalued, like in 99, where they're,
sure,
you know, where they're, you know, 15 times revenue and 200 times earnings. I mean, I don't know why you'd want to be in those things if you need money anytime soon. Now, if you're 25 and you're just, you know, lobbing a couple hundred dollars a week in and a few dollars happen to land in those stocks, I don't think that's going to bother you all that much. But I mean, I have a lot of people, some of the places I do stuff for, that are like 80, Jeff, and they want to fight with me. No, I want like all my money in Bitcoin or in Zoom or in, you know, some of these other places that, you know, hey buddy, you know, what are you doing here? The thing is, you know, 50 times revenue. I mean, come on. You know, what do you mean? That's the stuff that, you know, I mean, you still get people that want to trade yesterday's market. That's the, right? I mean,
you only live once.
Yeah, well, the government is increasingly involved. I mean, they're increasingly involved, unfortunately. And they always sort of were, but now they're, you know, on big moves, but they increasingly are now as well. And I don't see where, I mean, I've been reading some stuff this week that was, actually, you know what clouded my week so much this last week, Jeff? And I sent you an email the other day regarding this. Our last show last week was very troubling to me, because it's close to home, because you were talking about doing a lot of work, putting some stuff out there that's the truth, and how you have some dedicated people, you have a lot in Luckbox magazine, that go and read and learn something from that magazine. I mean, I think it's fantastic, because you guys, you know, basically work your fanny off to put that thing out there, and you're putting truth out there for people. That doesn't mean that Fox News wants you on TV and wants to be a sponsor in Luckbox. Nobody seems to want the truth. It's like people want to put their fingers up like, eh, and then stay away from it. I mean, it's not, you're not changing anything. And you ask yourself, why aren't you? I mean, why don't people gravitate to this? Or me, I mean, trying my best to have the best people on here to pour some truth out here 2 hours in the morning. It's not like there's 40 million people dying to listen. I mean, it is strange. And I mean, hearing you say that last Tuesday, I felt like, God, I'm not the only one who feels that way. I mean,
it's sure. It's interesting that you picked up on that. And that was and I saw your email yesterday, and I know there was a conversation to come. So I was, that comment specifically was on two of our issues, since they're very theme-based, the Luckbox magazine issues. We go, you know, deep into a theme. There were two in particular that we've done most recently. The Amazon one, which was, you know, essentially a 15,000-word treatise recounting all of Amazon's abuses, and why there should be a closer look at them in terms of anti-competitive practices and monopolistic
you know, tendencies, et cetera, and everything from tax avoidance to fake product to competing with dual vendors, just the whole litany of things that Amazon does that people don't worry about because it's same day shit, you know, next day shipping, right?
Yeah.
So that issue and our issue about China, which got into the couple million Uyghurs that are interned and the other practices by China that are exploitive and, you know, threatening our national security. And they weren't politically explosive. They were just fact-based recounting. And I was lamenting about the fact that those, regardless of how in-depth or well thought out or well conceived or well edited, well documented those pieces were, you just don't feel as though you've moved the needle. And there's a little frustration when there are plain and simple truths, not like the political hack partisanship where people are talking about misinformation and disinformation and labeling thought and opinions that they don't like as being misinformation just for political purposes. You know, not like Biden declaring that Facebook is killing people, which is one of the most absurd, you know, remarks of the century and inoffensive to any kind of journalist. But it's frustrating that more people have so little interest in the truth and are more comfortable just, you know, reclining back in their own partisan bubble, you know.
You know, I have one passable piece of paper here. You've been in here, Jeff, and my file system is, shall we say, not the best. But I could probably find it if I had to. It had to do with why people think the way they do and why they become partisan. And it was, you know, you might not agree with all of it. I don't know if I did, but it was a light bulb went off in my feeble brain. And basically said that most people, if you think people are rational, they've figured out early that it's not worth the time to educate yourself on all the issues just because you vote. Because your vote really isn't worth squat. I mean, it's not like you don't want to vote. It's not like you shouldn't vote or you're not going to get off the sofa and get on the block to vote. But the fact is you realize that one vote is basically peeing in Lake Michigan, right? If that. What people end up, they realize it's not necessarily worth the time away from your kids, away from golf, away from anything, to really, you know, pound on the issues like you and I do because it's my business. I mean, I basically hold myself out to people as saying, I will watch all this crap all day long and watch your money so you don't have to, right? So it puts me in an unusual spot. And obviously you wanting to be up on what's going on in the world so you can write really nice stuff about it and put out a magazine. It puts us, it's our living to keep abreast of stuff to the best we can, right? Well, most people, right, they don't. So what they end up doing is they align themselves with a way of thinking and say, okay, whatever these guys roll with, I'll roll with. And whether it's the left or the right or something like that. And before they even, I'm not disparaging anybody. I'm just saying it's a different world. They might be out, you know, playing baseball, making $40 million a year. And by the way, both of us would probably rather be doing that, right, than what we're doing. The point being is I'm not going to worry about this next bill in Congress. I'm going to see where my guys, the Dems or the other guys, or my guys happen to be Republicans, where we are on the issue. And that's going to be my spot. That's going to be where I am on the issue. Now, I could never do that, right? That's just not me. I was, you know, I grew up questioning and I'll be questioning till I'm no longer here. But, I can see where that would happen, right? Jevin, and there's some subjects where I do just roll and say, well, you know, okay, I mean, it could be a sports team I like and, you know, I don't dig into their dirt. I just say I want to see them win and I'm not going to worry about whether they got a couple of no good nicks on the team. I'm not going to bother with that because it's my entertainment. You know what I'm saying? Everybody has something in which they're at a level like that. Or am I wrong?
Yeah, it makes sense. It's unfortunate, but it makes sense.
Well, I mean, anybody.
And then there are some people that, you know, feel as though that they have all the information they need, and
well,
this is perhaps a more rational viewpoint, that they've done their research or they've checked their own conscience and they have a conclusion on an issue and they don't need additional information. I have a little bit more respect on that, yeah, I suppose, you know.
Well, I have
at some point there was some deliberation and some examination of the merits of an issue. What I find most offensive, though, is what appears to be just this knee-jerk partisanship that occurs, you know, just by virtue of race, class, gender, political party, that you are this, or you're supposed to think this way. There's a lot of that going on, and both parties promote that, and whether it just makes us all a lot dumber.
Well, we say a couple of, I won't even say family members, but I might say something like, you know, with that point of view, you might want to do a tad more rigorous research before you before you opine on that one again. Is that a nice way of saying I think you're ridiculously wrong?
Yeah.
But I mean,
I'll give you an example of that. We were doing not surprisingly, because it's true. It's a generalization that any honest person wouldn't rebut, is that the overwhelming amount of journalists and media people tend to fall on the left, on the liberal side of the equation. They're overwhelmingly Democrats and overwhelmingly contribute to Democrats. They're very progressive, and it's just true of overall media. You can point out, a conservative media platform or arm, but if you were to say, look on the aggregate, this is irrefutable fact. So it's not unsurprising that, I have editors on my team that fall on that side of the equation. And I recall once we were doing a kind of an op-ed piece, and it was an introduction to one of our issues. And it was about education, and we were basically saying, well, there is an area that the data suggests that there is common ground. And the common ground was, according to dozens of surveys, all very, very recent, that people favor school choice. They favor it. Minority families in particular, 80%, Black American families, Hispanic American families, Asian American families, overwhelmingly favor school choice. The parents of children K through 12 favor full choice. These aren't a 51%, but a 60, 70, 80% majority. So the fact of the matter is that exists. And I was making that note and saying, well, education is still the political issue that is less spoken of during general elections, yet here's an opportunity where there's common ground. And, of course, one of the editors said, no, that's not true at all. That's a Democrat. You're using a Republican or conservative talking point. I'm like, well, look at the data. The data says this. He says, no, I'm not going to back that editorial because it's just a Republican talking point. So he didn't care what the actual data said. That was of no interest to him, that minorities, Hispanics, people overwhelmingly favor something. He thought it was a partisan point because obviously the teachers union has bought and paid for the Democratic Party in the same way that, drug companies and oil companies have bought and paid for the Republican Party. So all he was doing was being a victim of his own biases and not looking at the facts, and he's an editor. So it happens all the time, and it happens in media. Of course, we overrule that, but and that's the advantage of having a nonpartisan issue-based editorial director. But it happened. I can't imagine what the newsrooms are like at CNN or MSNBC or Fox, where they have an overwhelming political bias in one direction or another. I don't know how the truth manages to squeak out anywhere.
Well, I think people have a bias. I don't know that it. I think a lot of it comes from the fact that we have less and less news outlets. I don't know that there was anywhere near as much of a general bias when Chicago had four papers. I mean, you knew that the Tribune was seriously Republican, right?
I mean, yeah, but I would take another position on that. I disagree. I think we, back then we really had three networks and three national papers. ABC, CBS, and NBC. Years ago, that was your choice of television programming, and then when it came to newspapers on a national basis,
the Washington, you know, the Wall Street Journal, WAPO, and the New York Times dominate the national. And yes, you're speaking about local papers, but what the internet changed is that there's just hundreds of thousands of media platforms.
There's media platforms.
So we actually have more content choices than less.
I'm gonna push back on that. I'm gonna say, and I have this argument with Matty Weber all the time, but he's convinced that I'm right now, Jeff. We'll see if you are. How can you have more outlets when you have less reporters? Everybody picks up on everybody else's crap.
Well, that's not really entirely true. There's a lot more. In fact, I would say there's more reporters. There are more people that call themselves journalists now than there would be 10 years ago, where you had to work at a major publication to get that label. There's citizens journalists, there's bloggers, there's people writing and posting stuff that should not be writing and posting stuff.
But I mean, I think there's
far more content being created by so-called journalists now than ever before.
I'm going to say that the Daily News during the war, they had people with the Army. They had a foreign desk. They didn't just take their stuff from New York Times, which everybody does now. I mean, there's no city desk, right? I think there's way less people. I mean, I think what people consider themselves being journalists is pick up on a story from somebody else and then opine on the story. They don't dig any new piece out of it. When the guy from the police commissioner was bombed over in a series, allegedly. Okay, so the series became the news, and it was broken, whatever we call about a story, I think by cranes. And I read the first story, and the first thing I thought was, wait a minute, the guy got picked up at 12:30, series closes at 8, it leaves a pretty big gap. I mean, why, but the first article didn't mention any other bar, they mentioned the series. So later in the day, I read the Sun-Times version, I read the Tribune version, and then I started getting it from the thing from ABC and my, you know, and whatever every single one, all they did, in my opinion, Jeff, was read the first horse bleep article that didn't have anywhere near the facts in there, and basically took the one, it was like my Latin class in high school. One guy did the homework and everybody else copied off it. I mean, there was not one. It wasn't until like a week later, until somebody said, "Oh, by the way, the place closes at 8. Where was he?" There was no news there. It was everybody grabbing somebody else's article, plagiarizing the hell out of it, changing three words like we used to do in Latin, and printing it. I don't call that news.
Well, I think I see both sides of that, but I think what there clearly is a lot more content opportunities. So you could use that to say that even aggravates, you know, that befuddles our question as to why aren't people better informed as to the truth when there's so much more content to choose from. And I think that's that whole confirmation bias thing, that just people want to, you know, recede back into their own bubble. And once you get to select and curate your own news, remember 10 years ago, not so much anymore, and that's why social media is a problem now. 10 years ago, at the advent of the internet, when it was, you know, just, you know, producing a lot more and we were still getting our arms around it, you would bookmark your site. So you might, if you're, you know, a progressive, you might be bookmarking the Huffington Post and the Daily Beast and the New York Times and the Washington Post. And you'd bookmark things in your browser, and that's how you'd go find them. Now you don't even have to do that because your information bubble and your algorithm is feeding you stuff that you attend, that you already think and believe. So the news feed from Facebook and Twitter and anything else that you're getting is just stuff that they know you've clicked on in the past and you believe. So it's like, hitting the thumbs up on your Spotify playlist, they just keep on serving you more stuff they think you're going to like. And the problem with that is, just like in music, nobody listens to new music anymore. I mean, every study has shown that the older you get, the more narrow your music tastes are. You just listen to stuff that you like, and you have no discovery anymore of music. And that's a well-documented fact, is that
You know, the older you get, you are more narrow in your music selections. And that's the problem.
Well, I mean, it's also
you're just kind of living in your own bubble.
But it's also part of if you're 65 and you have the time to listen to five songs a day, you can't justify dashing out to some live show tonight, seeing if these other guys might be good. You don't have the time. You don't have the. I mean, a lot of it has to do with what you're.
Well, you don't have to anymore, though. I mean, you can. They're at your fingertips. You can listen to.
Well, okay, but my guys from college, they are the absolute music mavens. Where these guys would, you know, sneak out of the window of their house when they were 13 and go to see somebody in L.A. You know, these guys knew every band from that ever played. They saw them and they're still looking for new stuff. But it's a life's work for these guys. I mean, it really is. I mean, I benefit every day. I get the memo. You know, go listen to this one, and I go to YouTube and listen. I get to listen because they did 5 hours work on it. Anyway, Jeff, let's go to break and continue this when we come back, because I think it's. It's, we mentioned Biden, bringing the thing about Facebook. I want to tie that into, you know, people wanting more money for a job now. You're right. Stuff is getting out there, and boy, people can lead this population around by the nose more than they ever could, I think. SP is up 17, NASDAQ is up 62. Oh, there, boy, there's a statement. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks Radio Show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Dave Scatino on the board. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph with us. We're jousting as we usually do, but I learned a lot from Jeff. And matter of fact, last week's show, all I did was think about it all week. So maybe I will this one too. S&P futures up 18. NASDAQ futures up 62. Dow futures up 203. Trying to hang over that 200 number because we were down. Well, I'll give you the exact number. Yesterday we were down 725 on the Dow, 68 in the S&P, and 152 in the NASDAQ. And we had bounced off our lows to get there. It was even uglier than that for a while. Over in Europe today, we've got the DAX up 55.4%, FTSE up 35.5%, CAC around up 56.9%. Those guys were down heavy yesterday. I think they were down actually heavier than we were yesterday, so they're bouncing back a little bit. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei not bouncing back, well, because they closed before we went down, but they were down yesterday as well. Nikkei down 264.1%, I'm sorry, a full 1%. Shanghai down 2, they were barely down yesterday, I think they're down like 18 cents yesterday or something, so they haven't moved at all these last 2 days. Hang Seng, however, down yesterday and down again today, down 230.8%. They've gotten hit, and we'll have to ask Jeff about this when we come back. If he thinks his Hang Seng sell-off has anything to do with our government saying, be careful doing business in Hong Kong. And maybe Jeff, while I'm doing this, why don't you think of what be careful means? Because I have no idea. Bonds 10-year, down another 2 basis points to 1.16. Are we going to go to 1%? That is crazy. Of course, I looked yesterday, $125 billion last week, Jeff, the Fed put in. I mean, with that kind of a gorilla in the room, it's really kind of crazy to sit here and talk about, technical analysis or something when those guys are doing that. A bond down 3 basis points to minus 0.42. Japan, right, as close as they can get to zero without going under, 0.009 positive. The UK is positive 0.52. Oil, up a little bit today, but boy, down a bunch from the last few weeks. It was up to 75, now it's 66.70, that's up 28 cents. Brent up a penny, 68.63. Natural gas, pretty much flat at 378. RBOB unchanged at 210. Gold, coming back 850, 1817, even though gold was down yesterday. Gold miners were down a bunch yesterday. Silver up 2 cents, 25.16. Copper up a penny, 421. And crypto is the story this morning, because Bitcoin's under 30,000, 29,701. It's down 987, and, it says here, 90 billion wiped off crypto as Bitcoin drops below 30. And as everybody, as I've talked about for the 10 years I've been on the show, the government makes out like a bandit on this, because if you made $1 million on Bitcoin, they want capital gains on $1 million. If you lose $1 million, you get to take off $3,000 a year for the rest of your life. And I got news for you. You're not living 300 years. Just saying. David, what do you got for us, Trevor, weather sports?
740 in Chicago. Weather currently is 73, partly cloudy. Will be a high of 85 and sunny today. For our Phoenix listeners, 90 and partly cloudy. They will reach 105 with some sunshine. Traffic this morning is getting kind of heavy with the buildup on the Kennedy and Eisenhower construction. 55 North also very busy, especially at the Ryan Expressway exit. There was an earlier accident on Tri-State North before US 12, 95th Street exit. Two left lanes are still blocked. Solid traffic, hour delay. There's another accident on the left shoulder to Ryan in the local lanes at 47th Street exit. In sports, NBA Finals tonight. Game 6, Suns play Milwaukee. And Milwaukee leads the series 3-2. Major League Baseball X last night. Sox played a doubleheader against the Twins. They dropped the first game 3-2. They took the second one 5-3. Cubs lose to the Cardinals 8-3 last night. And the D-backs beat the Pirates 4-2. Back to you, Chief.
Jeff, I don't know if, as we talk about traffic all the time, I was wondering if you listened at all to the show yesterday where I was contrasting the burn interchange thing where I drive by. Last week I probably drove by there 14, 16 times. Never saw anybody working because I drive in earlier than they show up and I leave later than when they leave. And during the weekends, of course, there's nobody there. And I was contrasting that with the Empire State Building. I did not realize until I got a missive from one of those core things. That thing was totally built in 13 months and they had no head start on it whatsoever. And, they had no staging area, and they didn't even have, nobody had invented, what's the crane that I foolishly call the creepy crawler crane, the one that goes up with the building? That had not been, that had not been invented yet. So in 13 months, they were 80 hours from the time the, piece of steel came out of the furnace in Pittsburgh, put on a train, put on a truck, and riveted into the building or bolted was 80 hours. This is back in 1930.
Right.
And that building's still standing.
And they've already had a couple of planes fly into that, and it's fine.
Right.
So explain to me how the hell we've gotten so much more advanced. We can't do it. And this is going to take, 15 years to this interchange, or 12 or something?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's a good point, man.
And
you know it's possible, because you see what China can do when they put a city together overnight to house coronavirus patients. They literally built a city in a matter of weeks. So it's all doable, but it's not doable under a intense regulatory regime. That's for certain.
Well, are people just, I don't know, maybe they're not used to, whatever it is, something has changed, and everybody puts, you mentioned the Joe Biden thing. I got this missive yesterday, and I get stuff from, obviously, both sides, and...
Yeah, what do you think about that? His Facebook comment.
Well, I mean, the whole idea is, the American story, the Bill of Rights and those things, it's easy to say somebody shouldn't, put out false information because it could harm people. But then it gets to the point where now that becomes false opinions. Now that becomes who gets to decide whose opinion is false and it isn't, right?
That's right.
It's like nobody should be able to file a frivolous lawsuit. Okay, but in order for somebody to decide it's frivolous, somebody else has got to read it, right? I mean, you can't just, because you're on the other side of it, label it frivolous, not let anybody read it and toss it out. I mean, there's always the next question, right? Right, Jeff, that nobody ever wants to answer. And I would say that, when you and I were kids, it was, your freedom of speech ends in being able to yell fire in a crowded theater when there is none, right? And we've been fighting over that, where the line there is for forever and probably will forever, right? I mean, and clearly now, when we were young, if you were or knew of a bully, I never was, and the person wanted to say bad things about you, they pretty much had to say it to people's faces and risk, somebody dotting their eye, basically, right?
Right.
Now it's a lot easier to say bad stuff about people and be anonymous. You don't have to.
It's true.
You don't have to take your poster and put it on the middle of the town poster board or something. So you have all these kinds of things, but now we're at this point where I don't get. We actually had this discussion this weekend about these vaccines, and tell me where I'm wrong here, Jeff. I had the COVID. It didn't bother me all that much, so I was thankful about that. I went for the antibody test to make sure that I had it. And, oh, by the way, that I was safe for other people. And I ended up, a big blinking red light to play antibodies, so you're good to go. I couldn't harm anybody else. Okay, so I also know that at some point that's going to wear off. Nobody seems to know when. It appears that after 6-8 months, they're still going strong. And after that, we don't know yet. So I went to the doctor to get a refill on something, and I said, where do you think I should be on this vaccine? He goes, it's been 8 months. It's probably time. Because nobody with any brains wants to give somebody the vaccine when you're creating your own antibodies, because it could really mess you up, right? You don't want the vaccine that quickly. So he says, it's about time. So if you see any spot where they have it and it's convenient, why don't you get it? So, of course, I go get the prescription, and the lady says, I'm not doing anything right now. Why don't you just do it right now? So I did. I think that that's somewhat the logical approach, Jeff, and that's what I did. And I believe after this time that these vaccines are about as safe as they can be at this point. But I don't feel at all, even though I would bet that I've read more about this than 90% of all the politicians or people that are, or people that, sports figures or people who are now absolutely guaranteeing people that these things are safe as hell. I don't know that, Jeff. They don't know that either. I mean, I think right now, given what's happening, I went and got it. In my opinion, the good outweighs the bad. But am I going to say that 10 years from now, I'll assure you that there's not anybody born with three heads? How could I possibly do that, Jeff? I mean, at this point, the odds seem to favor everything's okay. So I would recommend somebody getting the vaccination. Am I 100%? No. And anybody who says they are, you know, I got news for you. You aren't. I mean, but I think I'm in the right spot on this one. What do you think?
Well, you're operating on, you know, available data, and that's all you can do. So that's the good news. The problem is you don't have all the available data. I mean, there's things we don't know. But, yeah, you know, at the surface, it is very, very clear based on what data that we have seen, particularly with the new cases being, you know, predominantly among non-vaccinated people. To date, less than 1,000, I believe the number 791 people who have been vaccinated have subsequently died. It's a number that you don't see frequently. More than that number of 791, there are cases of heart problems, heart palpitations, extended heart palpitations, and the lasting headaches and other neurological symptoms that have emerged that have been directly linked with taking the vaccine. But since no one wants to quantify that information out of fear, in the same way that they were fearing, you know, feared telling the truth about herd immunity and other things like that, you know, that data is being held back from us, so you can't make full decisions. But here's what we do know. We know that this vaccine, as you said, is very effective, and we know that the virus is very potentially deadly for those who contract it, particularly those who are obese and over the age of 75. We know that the average death age of people who contracted coronavirus exceeds that of the average life expectancy in the U.S. So what does that tell you? If you're old and you have comorbidity issues or obesity issues, you really, really need to get this. You know, if you're not in those categories, well, you know, maybe there's more of a decision to make. No vaccine is perfect. You know, side effects is something that even though the administration and CDC are reluctant to disclose information about, they exist, but it appears as though the overwhelming evidence is to get the vaccine. You know, and if you're taking that personal risk, then you're taking the personal risk. What still isn't clear to me to this day is why the administration is so focused on bullying and calling out those people for one reason or another who are making decisions with the information that has been put in front of them about not taking the vaccine. You know, yeah, are they putting themselves in greater risk? Yes. Are they putting anybody else in greater risk around them? No. Only those others who have come to that same decision. So, why don't, you know, move on and govern the country. You know, the biggest hypocrisy is calling Facebook out for killing millions of people when over a million people have come across our borders at a record pace, unprecedented, ever, 117,000, 120,000 a month, none of which are being screened, and they're being released in the country. So if there's any policy that might be killing millions because of that's related to the vaccine, it would be the immigration policy at the border. So I don't want to hear the hypocrisy. I don't want to, you know, hear this grand plan where corporate power and government power. You want to define fascism? It's when the government intervenes on corporate activity. And really, you've got the government that's picking out, you know, who's spreading misinformation on COVID and collaborating with private, with companies like Facebook to determine who should be banned. Just solve, you're exposing potentially millions to people with the virus crossing the border. So this hypocrisy is just ridiculous. I'm not buying it.
Well, I mean,
get the vaccine. The data says you should. It's that simple.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Jeff. Again, you were in my head all week with last week, your comments last week. This is weird now. You know, this reminds me. I was reading more stuff about Nazi Germany this week, and I
1984, right?
Okay. Well, worse than that, I was reading about 1932 in the German economic system. I mean, right now, when you talk about these governments and the information, and I got something in the mail, email. I say mail. Regarding this new, this Fed deciding they want to go into their own Bitcoin currency. Why is it, Jeff, that I'll say this. I'll lob this one out there. Old guys get to do this. Young people are out of their friggin' mind when they don't realize the shot to their freedom that they're going to take if there's no cash money. If everything you do, the government knows what you did and where you did it and who you did it with. Because every time, I mean, you're out of your mind if you think that that's okay and you're willing to give up, you know, convenience. I'm happy to pull out my $3, not the $3 part, at the Dunkin' Donuts. By the way, $3 isn't even enough anymore. To get the coffee, because I don't want anybody knowing that I was in the Dunkin' Donuts buying coffee. It's none of their freaking business.
Right. Well, Bill, tell me more about the Fed speaking to having their own cryptocurrency.
Well, that's what they've been threatening now for a while.
That's a story I've missed.
Well, they're trying to find a way, I think in concert with the IRS and everything, that everything you do has to be electronic. I mean, just go to your bank and find out how much they have to keep tabs on everything you do. And right now, they're using it. They're forcing it down the system. I mean, even PTI. I mean, we have to. I mean, if you walked in with a, I mean, I don't know how the guys are at Tasty Trade. I'm sure it's the same way. If somebody walks in with you know, you did some consulting work for XYZ 5 years ago, and they gave you paper stock, and now the thing's actually trading. You walk in with it. If you don't have a long-standing account of like, you know, $1 million or something, nobody will take that paper. They're going to immediately brand you as a money launderer. How did you get this? And we're going to have to ask you how you got it. Why is it any of my business? Where you have to come up with your consulting agreement? I mean, you have to prove to me like I'm the police that you got these shares. Even if I call the registrar and say, oh no, we gave that Jess Joseph 10 years ago. He did some work for the place. That's not good enough. Or if you go to a bank and you close on your house and you pull $500 out of your pocket, where'd you get it? Now, the people have decided they're going to become the police for the police. I mean, this is, anybody who doesn't think that we aren't becoming the Gestapo here really isn't looking, Jeff. And now the next thing is going to be, this is called electronic money, where there's not going to be any cash. I mean, it's to the point now where if you go to the bank and you take $500 out, don't think for a second that it's not. When people say, oh no, if it's over 11,000 or something, you have to write a report. But it doesn't mean that if you take out 8,000 8 weeks in a row, there's no law there. The law says that if it's over 11,000 or whatever it is, it goes up all the time, the bank has to send a report into the government. There's no Denny Hastert law that says that if you take out $9,000 8 weeks in a row, that you are guilty of getting around the regulation, therefore you can go to jail. Where did that come from, Jeff?
Yeah.
I mean, we're implying laws to regulations, you don't even know that are there, that you get around them. And I mean, we need to push back on all this stuff, and yet every young person says, what are you talking about? I'll do anything for convenience. I'm not hiding anything, so I don't care if anybody looks. You and I are from the generation that said, if anybody's looking, I don't want to show them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't. That's right. I suppose there was a time in life where I wouldn't care if I had the front shades open, and the young ladies could look in. Well, now I want to close it. I mean, it never was anybody's business what you and I did behind closed doors, whether there was a law about. And you know what? I don't know.
Well, that's altruistic act, not a civil service.
Yeah, it's an altruism. I mean, the mirror is a problem. What can I tell you? But what I'm saying is why, and you and I are trying to, I feel like I, when I was on the trading floor and on the board, and I wanted to maintain a free market in option trading and stock trading. And I got washed over with the tide, and I feel I'm doing the same thing now. You and I trying to speak out in truth on somebody's product. I don't know if we got a chance, Jeff. That's, you know, that's why you were in my brain last week, because you said the same thing.
Sure.
Do we have a chance? Are we losing or are we gaining? I think we're losing.
Well, it looks like we're losing. When you have it looks like we're losing. When you have a government, when you have a press spokesperson, and again, I'm not being political here. I'd say the same thing. If you had Trump talking about, you know, banning somebody from anything, from speaking, when you have a political spokesperson standing there saying that the collaborating, colluding with private corporations as to whose speech to ban based on what they denote as misinformation.
Jeff, take this thought, and hopefully you and I will meet before next week. If not, we'll talk. Take this thought. These companies now, they're almost competing with governments, our government. They're as big. They want to control the information, and the government's saying, no, we want to control it. You and I might say, I don't want either one of you controlling it. I mean, how much is business right now convinced this entire country that all your problems, all your inflation problems, have nothing to do with the Fed, have nothing to do with oil, have nothing to do with anything. It's some poor guy making $10 an hour wanting 12. And how many people in this country are believing that right now? And you and I know that's the biggest hunk of BS we've ever come across.
How about it, right?
And yet how many people would say that's the problem? Man, look at these prices. You can't get somebody to work for less than $20 an hour. Really? Like if all of a sudden everybody went back at $10 and bowed their head and say, yes, Massa, and walked into the McDonald's, and all of a sudden the prices would go down on the board. Does anybody really believe that?
Yeah, not at all.
There are people that do, obviously. Jeff, thank you very much, buddy. And let's get ourselves together. S&P futures now only up 16. We've come back a little bit, but we're still much better than yesterday. NASDAQ up 62. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.